Shout out to all my listeners out there. This is your host, Moshe Canty, host of the new podcast, Conscious Moves. This is your second episode of season one. Glad that I had an opportunity, man, to spend some time out listening to all the feedback that we got from episode one of Conscious Moves. It was really, really good to hear what everybody had to say. I heard a bunch of comments that I definitely took into consideration. And I really appreciate, man, my people out there that are doing what I believe is a service to the community by just listening to something that they believe can help not only me but all of us as a whole. So I'm thankful for the opportunity. Some have suggested a number of things that I really believe is important in terms of what's helping to get this project up off the ground. I'm not going to get into that right now at this moment. Eventually I will, inshallah. I just want to just speak on a few things, because some people had some questions regarding, you know, the whole Conscious Moves thing and where we were trying to go with it. And I don't know if I was clear in what I was trying to say or what I was conveying to the public. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't. Let me take a few minutes of our time to try to get that done. So Some have asked me. Some have said, "Yo, Mo, what's the whole purpose? What's the objective? What distinguishes you from others?" And I thought I made that clear. But if not, this is the case. We're trying to raise the consciousness of our people. This is what my objective is at Conscious Moves. I want to help us be able to get a little bit more focused as to why we're making the decisions that we make. I'm not knocking all the other podcasts. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there saying something, trying to inform you about things. And rightfully so. People should be well informed. But this particular podcast is designed to help us just examine and re-examine constantly the moves that we're making. We make moves every day. And I think I expressed that already. You and I, we're making moves every single day. So what I'm trying to do is to help you be able to make the best decisions. That's what this is all about. So you can call Moshe your coach. You can call him your life coach, a motivational speaker, so to speak. You can call me whatever it is that you would like to call me. I'm just a guy in your corner trying to push you to make better decisions. And why do I do that? Because like I said, If there's anyone who is an expert in this field, it's me. What am I an expert at? Making poor decisions. So I think that I'm qualified to be able to help you make better decisions. Why? Because I know how it is to be down that road of making poor decisions. And this is what today's segment is about. I just wanted to talk about the art of making poor decisions and ultimately where it can lead you. Because last week I spoke about me spending 22 years of my life confined to a state correctional facility, or facilities for that matter, under the jurisdiction of the New York State Department of Community and Correction Supervision. Yeah, 22 years of my life. I was 21 years old when I went in. I'm now 43. So I was really a couple of weeks shy of my 43rd birthday, but you know, rounded out, it was 22 years, so to speak. So I want to first give you a backdrop of who I was, where I come from and everything like that. A lot of people know this, but a lot of people don't. From Brooklyn, but child of East New York, born and raised in the hood. But I come from a really solid foundation. My father, may he rest in peace, his name is Soul Chaos Papa Son Canty. He was a world-renowned martial artist from out of Brownsville. In fact, he's from Tilden, 300 Dumont. Born and raised. My mother, on the other hand, also a child of Brownsville. 619 Rockaway Boulevard. Excuse me, 619 Rockaway Ave. She's from Brownsville Houses. None of my parents have ever been arrested for anything. They've made some very wise decisions. I'm also certain that they've made poor decisions in their lives as well. But that's not the point. That's neither here nor there. I'm a byproduct of that union between my parents, who taught me some very solid values, who instilled in me some very solid values when I was a young man. One is respect for others, love for family, and the importance of our culture as Black people. That was instilled in me as a young man or as a young child. My father raised us as, he tried his best to raise his kids as Hebrew Israelites. So we grew up with, at the very least, an understanding of what Black culture meant for us. He was big on educating us about who we were and where we came from as a people. This is why he gave me the name Moshe. He named me after the prophet Moses. And he told me, he said, I want you to understand what your name is and what it means, what the significance of it is. So I understood it at a very young age. I knew exactly who I was at a very young age. So there was a lot banking on me as I got older. I had a task. Not everybody has that. Not everybody gets a task when they're young. So when I began making poor decisions, people were very disappointed. Not because I was just, you know, a child from my mother and my father, and they loved their son and they taught me better than that. Of course, that was a part of it. But a more significant part of that was that they had high expectations of me because they knew I knew better. And that's what ultimately made it difficult for me to have to deal with spending so much time in prison, is because I knew better, or I knew that I was better than where I was. So that foundation was strong. It was solid. I don't have the excuse of, with all due respect for others, I don't mean to use this as an example to belittle anyone's circumstances, but I didn't come from a dysfunctional home. Granted, my mother and my father separated when I was relatively young, but I didn't come from a dysfunctional home. There was, the love was deeply entrenched in this household, and it was disseminated amongst everybody. Love was continuously, you know, expressed in my household. So I didn't see the arguments. I didn't see the fighting and other. I didn't even know that these things existed until my mother came to me and was like, well, you know, your father and I are separated. I didn't even recall understanding what that meant. So I come from love. I come from love. I like to always tell a story about where I believe at, I think this was a critical point where my life began to kind of like take a turn for the worse, so to speak. The reason why I say that is because when you look at it, or you look at my life, I began to kind of like manipulate my situation a little bit. My father was a very stern disciplinarian in my life. Wasn't abusive, but he was a presence in my life where you knew that if you got out of line, he was going to bust you upside your head. And you didn't want to get bust upside your head by my father. His hands was like seriously deadly on a whole nother level. So this was a concern of mine. But I noticed something as my father like left my home and I realized that I could get away with stuff, it was like I could do what the heck I wanted to do. So I kind of took advantage of that at a very young age. I drove my mother crazy for that, and I regret that. May Allah forgive me for that. But I drove my mother completely crazy. But I've realized something early on, that when I did get in trouble, like particularly in school, school faculty tried to correct my ways. They just couldn't understand why I was so intelligent academically, but behaviorally I was horrible. One of the worst kids in the school. They couldn't understand this. So I was like an anomaly. But I noticed that every time I misbehaved and that my mother couldn't deal with me, she said, I'm going to call your father. And my father would come to the school, and I realized that I was more happy that my father would stop his busy and hectic schedule to pay attention to me, more so than I was afraid that he might do something to me, like, let's say, put his hands on me. So I began to take advantage of that at a very young age. And I believe that these are like the early stages of my intentional poor decision making. Although I was young, I believe that this was very intentional on my part. But later on in my life, I think that as I began sitting in that cell trying to find out who I was and what my purpose was in this life, it was when I began to make the connections as to why I ultimately behaved the way that I behaved throughout the course of my life. And I said last week or last episode that we have a tendency at, well, let me rephrase that, that our lives are a long series of interconnected events that continuously take place. Let me explain that briefly. The adult that you are today is a direct result of the values, the morals, the social norms, etc., that were embedded in you as a child. The way you behaved is a reflection or a manifestation of who you are today. Those events are connected. There are no gaps between that. You are who you are as a result of those interconnected events. Everything is connected in that regard. So for me, I think that, I know that now, as I began to sit in a prison cell, checkmate. Remember, we talking about making moves here. Checkmate. I'm in a corner, unable to move, at the mercy of white racist captors telling me when I'm going to eat, when I'm going to use the bathroom. Well, probably not use the bathroom, but when I can basically get some toilet tissue to wipe my butt, because they don't give out too much toilet tissue in prison. I don't know if anybody who hasn't been to prison is aware of that. So you got to be very, very careful about how you use that stuff, because that stuff can come back to haunt you. But anyway, that's another discussion. So as I began to sit back and think about these events that took place in my life, I realized that the person that I became, the Moshe that I became, the one with the notoriety, the one everyone in prison seemed to know, was directly connected to the events of my childhood. So I began to ask some critical questions. Why is it that I have this fascination with wanting to be accepted? Why am I making the decisions that I'm making today? And why is it that these decisions seem to be some of the most poised decisions you can make, where they constantly or they continuously have me finding myself confined to a prison cell for 23 hours a day? Well, you know, in East New York, we all come from diverse backgrounds. But growing up in the hood, man, it was tough. You know, you had to constantly prove yourself. I was out there in the streets, constantly trying to prove myself. But I noticed one thing early on was that what we were out there trying to do was just trying to keep pushing each other to do some of the most dumbest stuff ever. Some of the most foolish stunts you can imagine. This is what me and my childhood associates were trying to prove to each other. But I noticed that as each and every one of us continued to do some of the most outlandish stunts, the one who committed the most foolish stunts kind of like had his rank raised. So it's like, yo, listen, today, I'ma just throw a bottle off the roof at the cops. Tomorrow, a person will be like, yo, you know what I'ma do? Yo, I'ma throw a rock at the police that drive by. Oh, well, you know what I'ma do? And it keeps going on from there. And I think it got to the point where for a child like myself, in retrospect, I realized I was dealing with a lot of security issues, identity issues, trying to figure it out. I didn't have it all together. I had some esteem issues early on too. But there was this fascination I now know with wanting to be accepted, this fear of being ostracized by my peers and not assuming to be accepted. I didn't want nobody to say, yo, Moshe wasn't down to do this. I had a problem with that. As I got older, I didn't understand why that was such a big thing for me. But I had a problem with that. I couldn't understand that as a young man or as a young child. I just wanted to be the guy that was accepted. I wanted my peers And the guys who were older than me, the guys that were already caught up with a bunch of foolishness in the hood, I wanted them to know that I was going to be down to do some stuff, man. But why does a child feel that way? Why does a child want to feel excited? That doesn't happen to everybody. Everybody doesn't get caught up like that. Or if they do, some are fortunate enough to get pulled back. You know, the reins are pulled back, so to speak. But why was it that I was so focused specifically on not wanting to be or appear to be ostracized? I was caught up. Of course I can say that. That's easy. Anybody can say that. Yeah, they was caught up. No. I'm not just gonna rest on the fact that I was caught up. I was dealing with some serious issues and I couldn't identify them at that time. But the truth is this. The truth is that in my adult years, I really believe, and now I know, that my father's departure was a direct result of my behavior. Because after his departure, I had a fear that male figures who I trusted in my life would somehow just leave. And I looked at my peers or the males in my life similarly as I looked at my father. They were not my father, so to speak, but the fact that they were males spoke volumes. So you could have been my so-called friend as a child, but I just wanted to please you to the extent that you thought that I was down to the point that I was willing to do whatever so that you wouldn't abandon me. You wouldn't walk away and be like, nah, Moshe ain't down to do this. So I was willing to do whatever. The problem with that was that as time went on, I created a monster within a monster within another monster. So it's like the hate that hate produced, like Malcolm X, you know, said. It's just the hate that hate produced. It continued to metastasize, meaning it continued to get worse. The cancer continued to grow. It continued to grow. It continued to grow to the point where now I had a reputation. Excuse me, we had a little technical difficulties, pardon me. But as I was saying, it metastasized. It was as if the cancer just got worse and worse and worse. And what happened was that this monster became an identity of someone who I didn't even know. It took on its own form. It continued to mutate and got worse and worse and worse. I remember a while ago, the people who raised me in my very community, some of the women in my community told me that there was a time that they couldn't even recognize me. Not the physical recognition, but that my behavior was not a reflection of the values that they remember were instilled in me as a child. So they had a hard time being able to identify with me. But let me share a quick secret with you. Not only did they have a hard time identifying with who I was, I also had a hard time identifying who I was. If someone would have asked me, Moshe, who are you? And why are you? I would not have been able to answer those questions. Yeah, I probably would have gave you a regular, you know, a simple, what was cliche. A cliched response. My name is Moshe, and this means that, and it means this, and it means that. But I would have been very disingenuous had I just left you with that particular answer. Because the truth was, I didn't even know who I was. I didn't know that it was only a matter of time before I would find myself in a pair of handcuffs that would ultimately lead to my incarceration. And that I would spend 22 years in a state penitentiary. So it goes back to making decisions. I became known as the Moshe who was down to do whatever was required of me in the streets. We had to go do it. We got some drama. We got to go handle that. We got to go do this. Call Moshe. A very reliable, dysfunctional individual, man. As oxymoronic as it comes. But that was my story. This desire to please one's peers for fear of being abandoned and ostracized. That was me. Prison only made that experience worse for me. In addition to that, becoming a part of a gang only made that worse for me. It's no secret. Everyone knows that. At some point in my young life, I became incarcerated and became a part of a gang known as the Bloods. I would argue now that decision-wise, it was arguably one of the worst decisions that I've ever made in my life. Do I have any regrets that I made the decision? No, because I would not be here now today talking, you know, on my podcast, explaining the decisions, the poor decisions that I've made in hopes of helping others make better decisions. So I don't regret making the decisions, but it was a horrible decision that at the time I made it, it should have never been done. You know, in time, we're going to speak specifically about, you know, inshallah, we'll speak specifically about the mental and the physical, the decisions that are made, the spiritual, the social and educational, cultural, legal, political. I've already expressed that in the last episode, but we'll touch on the various facets of oppression that exists within the community, the Black community in particular, and our willingness or unwillingness to be able to overcome those many facets. I spoke last week about the physical component of our condition, about diabetes and high blood pressure, which ultimately, you know, obesity leads to these ailments and cardiovascular diseases and so on and so forth. I spoke about that. But I also intentionally left out the other part of the physical part of the community that affects us as well, which is black on black crime. And I noticed that being a part of that gang life ultimately or eventually led to the perpetuation of fratricide, meaning the continuous attack from one black man on another black man. So this is why I say arguably one of the worst decisions that I made, because it allowed me to become associated with a group that advocated this. But I'll get to that another time. We'll be able to examine the nuances of the subculture. We'll be able to determine what decisions ultimately led to me joining this group and what decisions led to me saying that I can no longer be a practitioner of this particular group. Not only, you know, because of the senselessness, but due to my own personal evolvement and development as an adult. But going back to the question of who am I and why am I would not have been able to answer that question, honestly, because I really didn't know who I was. I was struggling with my identity. I think the hard part about being able to or struggling with your identity is not knowing that you're struggling with your identity, but giving the impression that you have it all figured out. It took me a very long time to actually begin to start figuring it out. So after poor decision, 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 I finally said to myself, I no longer want to live my life making poor decisions anymore. And neither do you. Just because you made a poor decision yesterday does not mean you cannot redeem yourself today and make a better decision. And that later on today, you can't make an even better decision. And that tomorrow, you can't make an even better decision than the previous two. Each time you make a better move, you're putting yourself in a better position. So this is what this is ultimately about to the ones the brothers and the sisters who ask me a question regarding what the ultimate objective of this platform is for. It is to simply help us examine why we are making the decisions that we are making in hopes that we will make better decisions. But in addition to that, on a more critical level, I want us to think critically about who we are and why we are. So ask yourself these two questions. Who am I and why am I? If you cannot answer these two questions instantaneously, and I don't necessarily mean you answer them like as if you're some robot. No, I mean if you're not able to answer these questions as if some thought has been put into these questions, it means that you might be having identity issues. That's my opinion. That's not grounded in fact or anything, but it's just an opinion. But I'm only basing that on my understanding of what I dealt with and my experience with others who also had identity issues as well. Because a lot of times we think we know who we are, but who we are is a reflection of the decisions that we're making. If you're making poor decisions every day, and when I mean poor decisions, I spoke last episode about doing 100 miles per hour when you're only supposed to be doing 50 miles per hour. You then can't say to yourself, why? I'm a law-abiding citizen. I always abide by the law. I'm the best. I would say you're having identity issues. You really don't know who you are. I'm just being 100. So my point is that we can say one thing, but doing another is key. It's very, very key. So we have to be very, very mindful specifically about the decisions that we make. So this is what ultimately we're about. Making wise decisions. You know, I didn't want to focus too much on the negative, because somebody asked me, a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, who I've known for years. We've played Lindvet football together. We went to high school together. This was a very good friend of mine. He is a very good friend of mine. He asked me about focusing on a particular subject matter, which would highlight simply the negative. Because some people have, you know, podcasts, they're on YouTube, they're highlighting the negative. Oh, I did this, yo, I cut this, yo, when we used to get busy, yo, I did this. That's all right. You know, I could get to that at some point, you know, right? But then I say to myself, okay, well, what about pulling the reins back from that and then now talking about voter suppression? How do we then now attract an audience of individuals who could care less about prison war stories? Some people don't want to hear about prison war stories all day. That's just the fact. But some people want to hear about voter suppression. That's a political part of our community that is not being discussed. What about mass incarceration? The fact that it is a scourge on American democracy. Who's speaking about that? I mean, there are those who are out there on the front lines that are speaking about the criminal justice system. But I think that I have extensive experience in that regard to be able to do that. Therefore, I don't think that we should just limit ourselves just to the physical part of the community. I can speak about the legal aspects of it, rightfully so, as well as the political. But we also need to address some issues pertaining to the educational conditions in our people, in our communities. Do we need to talk about the lack of funding that is being allocated towards public schools in the community and why there is a disproportionate in comparison to white affluent communities, why the resources are not coming into our communities, why they're going into white affluent communities more so than in ours? Of course we can have that conversation. And eventually we will, inshallah. But this goes back to making moves. Again, what moves are we making and how we're making them is key. So when we speak collectively as a community I'm going to use my experiences overall to help in that process. So I want you guys to see me using my flaws, my shortcomings, so that you can look at your flaws and your shortcomings. So we're going to do this whole mirror effect, so to speak, so that I can ask who I am and you can ask yourself, who are you? Why are you? And I can do the same thing with me. So if I can see these flaws in within myself, then I can say, you know what? I need to make better decisions about what it is that I'm going to do about or in furtherance of my objectives. And you can do the same thing. So it's like each one teach one. We pick one another up, and then we try to do the same thing for everybody else that's with us as well. Or those of us in our community who are striving to better themselves as well. Okay, so we have a lot of topics to discuss. We have a lot of topics. I want to bring on some guests who are going to speak about the effects of mental health in the community. What are we doing to address these issues? We know that physically, some of us try to deal with our health issues, health-related issues. And the way that we do so is that we go to the doctor. When we have a poor diet, some of us go on the diet. We start a strict exercise regime or regimen. When some of us are having spiritual issues, some of us, you know, we go to the church, we go to the mosque, we go to the synagogue, we go to the temples, and et cetera, et cetera. But what happens when many of us are having psychological or emotional issues? Where do we go then? So there are areas in our lives where we're not capitalizing off of them because we're making poor decisions. So many of us need to see some psychiatrists, man. We need to speak to some people. We need therapy. But because we're not getting the help that we rightfully need, we are making poor decisions throughout the course of our lives. And I know this to be true because many of us are suffering on many levels, on a host of levels, too many to name. I was gone for 22 years. I came home as if some of my brothers and sisters many of them have not even evolved. They are still in the same condition, if not worse, than they were when I left. And I said to myself, I said, damn, man, this is serious, man. This is some serious stuff. This is an indication that we are suffering on massive levels. So these issues need to be addressed. We need to speak about these things openly. So I intend on calling a panel of individuals so we can speak about these issues. Some are formerly incarcerated men who will express the difficulty of coming home and making the transition from prison to society, and our loved ones not being able to understand how difficult that process actually is. Then there will be others who may have had traumatic experiences take place in their early years and will speak to how it has haunted them throughout the course of their lives and has contributed to the poor decisions that they've made. My point is that we're going to speak specifically about these issues to help us not only just talk about them, but talk about them so that we may seek help for them. And by seeking help, we then can make better decisions. Okay? So this is just some of the things that my audience, you know, the people out there can look forward to. Okay? So with that, I'm going to close out. But remember, you know, I, like our motto says, a conscious mind makes the best moves. And what that means is that the more aware you are of your reality, the likelihood is that you will make better decisions. I hope that everybody is able to utilize this podcast for their own individual well-being. And I hope ultimately that it helps us all as we pursue our goals But if we do not have individual goals, I hope that it can help us get to the point where we say we want to do something that will afford us the opportunity to start making some better decisions ultimately. So with that, you guys take care. Assalamu alaikum. Shout it out, y'all. This is Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. This segment is sponsored by Mighty Healthy. Listen, one of the best conscious moves that you can make is to invest in your physical health. Mighty Healthy will help you do just that. It strengthens your immune system, improves digestion, reduces inflammation due to its high concentration of antioxidants, and replenishes your body with the essential vitamins and minerals it needs daily. Go to MightyHealthy.com, and to get 20% off of your purchasing price, type in the code CONSCIOUS. Tell them that Moshe sent you.